Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1824. The topic is Q&A and the title is Training for Strength While Participating in a Non-Strength Focused Sport. Okay, so I have a new client. We're just starting working together. We just had our first consultation earlier this week. If you are interested in working with me, I do free 15-minute consultations now because I want to get a chance to know the person. I want them to get to know me, and we can each see how dedicated we are and how much we're going to stick with what we want to do moving forward. So I want people to want it as much as I do, and I'm excited to get to meet more people, get to talk to more people, and keep things growing in that way. So we did our 15-minute consultation. He was a college athlete. He got hurt in the weight room, so he didn't actually get hurt out on the field. He got hurt in the weight room, ended up losing his scholarship and life choices and whatnot, and dropped out of school. He said he then got, after a little bit of time of kind of mentally recovering from it, he got into CrossFit, and he started getting very good in CrossFit. He got to regionals, started doing really well, but he got hurt. He then took a year to rehab. He came back and got hurt again. So he was getting frustrated, and he then saw an activity or a sport, whatever you want to call it, called tactical games, where there's a fitness component and then like a shooting component, and he really loved that, got into it, but he tore his hamstring. So he has just had one hell of a run of trying to be competitive in something, but he keeps getting hurt. He said that he wants to be competitive. He thinks powerlifting is boring, so he doesn't want to do that. He's not big enough body frame-wise to do strongman, so he says he's just a little uncertain. He loves CrossFit, and he loved the tactical games. He's just tired of getting hurt. So in our consultation, he said, I know strength helps all sports, so I do want to get stronger, and I do believe I have room to get stronger in a way that will help my sports, but I just don't want to get hurt anymore. And his challenge is he believes getting stronger will prevent him from getting hurt, but every time he gets into weight training for strength, he gets hurt. So he just doesn't know what in the world to do. Our goal together will be to get him back into CrossFit because he's freaking good at it, and I want him to complete the tactical games goal because he set that for himself, and I don't want him to think he can't do it, so we're going to do that. But his main passion is CrossFit, so we're going to get into that. But we're going to do it without injuries. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to share in today's podcast 5 tips that I use when approaching programming for somebody who wants to get stronger, but they compete in a non-strength focused sport. Meaning, if they compete in powerlifting, of course you want to get stronger because that's what the sport is. If you do strongman, you have to get stronger because that's kind of what the sport is. But in CrossFit, you are tested on strength. But in many ways, you are tested on endurance, cardiovascular endurance, muscular endurance. You're tested on the skill set of a lot of variety of activities. There's a lot of relative strength compared to absolute strength components. There's just a lot more to the sport than purely just being strong. So the strongest person doesn't always win in CrossFit. And that's something that's unique about non-strength sports. Is, you know, the strongest person in powerlifting is going to win unless, you know, there's somebody of very near comparison of strength and they just have better technique to display the strength, or the person who's stronger misses a lift command. But in general, the stronger athlete's going to win in powerlifting. In general, the strongest athlete's going to win in strongman. Maybe not so much as powerlifting, but both those sports, you're going to have more correlation to the strongest person winning than you would in a sport like CrossFit. Now, does strength help CrossFit? Abs-freaking-lutely. I help people with that all the time. I train CrossFit athletes very regularly to get them stronger, not only to prevent injuries, but to improve performance on everything. So it's a thing we do all the time. Absolutely love the sport. So that's what we're going to do with this person. So the 5 tips we're going to cover is the first one is nutrition and sleep. I know that's not a training program tip, but too bad, you're going to hear it because it's that important. The second tip is training to technical fatigue, not total fatigue. The third tip is to use intensity modulators in your training if you're not working with a coach who does like video reviews. I do video reviews, so I actually pick the weights I want the person to lift in their programming. So I actually tell them exactly the weight to lift. Whereas if you're writing your own programming, how do you decide on the weight to lift? So you would use intensity modulators to help with that. And then we want to, the fourth tip, understand the relationship between intensity and volume. And then the fifth tip is to use isolative movements over overload movements. So I'll come back and I'll touch on that here in a second. So the first tip we have is nutrition and sleep. If you're going to be asking the most of your body, you have to give the most to your body. No one does that. We all want more, 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 but we don't focus on giving back to the body. But podcast 1818, so 1818, we just made a couple days ago, like a week ago or so, is a training podcast titled Your Strength is Limited by Your Recovery. You will not get stronger if you do not give your body the material that it needs to make the increased strength. Training will help you improve your technical ability to display your strength. So you can get stronger in the sense of your way in which to display your strength by training alone. However, you have to have nutritional support, you have to have sleep support, recovery support in order to make all the neurological adaptations to actually increase strength in the long run, the muscular adaptations as well. So nutrition should be the first thing you look at. Most people will get stronger by simply staying with the programming they have now, but doing better with their nutrition and sleep. That's a harsh reality, but most people do not do well with nutritional consistency or sleep quality, and that's actually impairing their progressions in strength more so than switching to a brand new program would. My elite level powerlifters, I work with them all the time about nutrition, and we stay on top of nutrition and sleep all the time because there's no program that is going to maximize their body's output if we're not supporting the body in that process. So you have to pay attention to nutrition and sleep. I remember I had one client, loved to train. They would train 7 days a week, twice a day if I let them, but their nutrition was crap. They would kind of sort of maybe eat most days. Their protein was hit or miss. Some days they'd have 80 grams of protein. Another day they'd have 240 grams of protein or anything in between. The food was just absolutely everywhere. And they were saying, you know, oh, my elbows are hurting, my shoulders are hurting, my back is hurting. And it's like, well, what the hell, man? Like, you can't just go to the gym and tear your body apart and then not give it any of the material it needs to be put back together. So that was tough. That was a frustrating process. They just had this mindset that they could just punish their body into being better, and it just doesn't work. There is a cap to that. Eventually, you will plateau, and you'll start accumulating a lot of injuries. So you do absolutely need to pay attention to nutrition and sleep. For nutrition, you can go to our website, www.brillirongym.com. There's the free nutrition education page. The first document on that page is how to set up your own nutrition program. That'll teach you what the amount of calories you need, the total amount of protein you need, and then it'll talk to you about timing of your calories and protein throughout the day. So you can get that for free on our website. I do train people for nutrition only. If you want a personalized nutrition program, that includes a lot of personalized education. And then I do train people for nutrition and training. So if you want that, you can see about both those services on the website as well on our one-on-one services page. But you can get it for free, so you don't have to pay me anything if you don't want to. You can figure it out on your own. Just I want you to know what to do more than I care about making money from it. So that document on the website will tell you and teach you how to figure out your calories, your protein, and the timing so that we can get that sorted out and have it correct. Now, as for sleep, I do understand that we can't always sleep more, but we can sleep better. There's podcast 1149. It's a mindset podcast titled Creating a Healthier Sleep Pattern. That would be a great one to listen to because it'll help you do exactly that. Create a healthier sleep pattern. You can improve your sleep quality and just feel more rested from the sleep that you do get. For this client, they've been going to bed at random times. Sometimes it's basically they go to bed anywhere between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. And I'm like, not anymore. We're not doing that. So, because they need to train in the morning. And I was like, we need to get you some sleep. So we're going to have a consistent bedtime. They're going to get off their screen. They're going to lay in bed. If they can't, if they're not tired right away, they're going to read a book. Whatever they want. I just want them to be in their bed and not have an electronic device in front of their face. That's going to help them get to bed on a regular time. We're doing other things like melatonin and some other preparatory things to get them ready for bedtime. Like we have a blue light lens that we have on their computer now. I talk to them about timing their nutrition, the temperature of the room. They should have a light blanket. You want to actually dull the sensitivity of the skin. Our skin is basically awake while we're sleeping. So it will feel the change of a breeze. It'll feel the change of temperature. You want to have something that kind of like normalizes what it's going to feel. So even a light sheet, you know, if you don't like a blanket on you, you want to have something on you just to calm the skin down. So there's a lot of things we can do like that. We're going to get them up at a consistent morning time. So that way we can be more consistent in training in the morning. Their life is a little hectic. If they try to train at the end of work, it doesn't always happen and they're tired and, you know, life's a little chaotic. So they have a home gym and a pretty damn good home gym. So I was like, we're going to use that. We're going to get you up in the morning. We're going to get moving. And they're a very discipline-focused person. Anyhow, they like discipline. They like consistency. They like a routine. So we're just going to use that to our advantage. Now, the second tip is technique fatigue rather than total fatigue. What we mean by this is when we're trying to push our strength, we do not want to lift until the exercise looks like absolute crap. We don't want to push our intensity so deeply that the technique breaks down like significantly, because that does lead to injury potential, especially if you've already had an injury. That makes it significantly worse and much harder to avoid a future injury. So what we're going to be doing is we want to have technical components that we're focusing on. So for their squat, what I want them to do, when they were showing me their squat, there was two breakdowns that I wanted to fix. Number one was at the bottom, their heels would lift off the ground. So their bar path was almost like a diagonal forward line. So we needed to work on a different bar position. They were doing high bar. They're going to be better suited for low bar due to their anatomy. So we're switching to low bar. We're also going to be focusing on externally rotating the knees on the way down and maintaining more heel pressure. What I want them to do is at the very bottom, when they film themselves and watch themselves squat, I want them to see that their heel stays down on the ground at the very bottom. And as they start to come up out of the bottom of the squat, I want their chest to lift at the same time their hips do. So what we don't want to see is that the torso angles more towards the ground on the ascent than it does during the descent. So on the way down, they're going to have an angle where their chest is pointing like, you know, maybe 3-4 feet in front of them towards the ground. When they go to the transition to stand back up, we don't want that chest to angle further towards the ground. We want it to stay exactly the same as they drive up and then they'll upright themselves. So we're going to be watching the heel pressure on the ground and torso angle. I don't want them to go any heavier than what they can control those two cues for. Even if that means right now they can only squat 225, I don't care. It's more important that we squat correctly than it is to squat any amount of weight incorrectly. Incorrectly doesn't build the right muscles, and it just makes us more prone to injury. So we have to bring the weight down enough that they can squat correctly first. Then we'll go ahead and build that weight back up. I've done this a bajillion times with a bajillion people, and it works every single time, and every single time everybody stays safe, and eventually they end up crushing their old PRs. So it just takes some patience at the beginning part of it. But that's what we mean technical fatigue rather than total fatigue. What I want him to do is when he's doing a set of repetitions, if he loses his cue on one of the repetitions, but he believes he can get it back on the next repetition. Like it was more like a mental slip than a physical fatigue. I want him to go ahead and try the next repetition. But once he has two repetitions that at least like one or more technical cues break down, he has to stop the set. So if we're going for a set of five, and on rep number three, he feels like his heel might have come off the ground, but he can fix it on number four, go for number four. But then on number five, his heel lifts off the ground again. Well, the set's done. So once he has two ugly reps, the set is over. If he was going for a set of five, and we had an ugly rep on number two and an ugly rep on number three, we stop the set. Once he has two ugly reps, the set is done, regardless of how many reps we were supposed to do. This is very, very, very important when you're trying to train for strength, but strength isn't your primary goal. You actually have another sport in mind. If you get hurt aiming for strength, it's going to drop you out of all of your other like actual sport-related activities or significantly impair them. It's not worth it. It's better to leave a rep or two in the tank than it is to try to push an extra rep or two, get hurt, and miss a week or two or a month or two. So on our challenging sets, we are looking for technique fatigue, technique failure, not total failure. The third tip we have is to use an intensity modulator. Now, this is if you're not working with a coach. Is you want to use, whether it's percentages, RIR, which is reps in reserve, or RPE, which is a rate of perceived exertion. You want to use some kind of modulator that'll help you control your intensity so you're not just doing everything maxed out. Overwhelmingly, when I get very competitive people, they just destroy themselves. And they're like, I might have been able to do one more. And I'm like, good God, you shouldn't have done the three you did do. I was like, these look horrible. Please take the weight off. But they tend to just push themselves until they die. And then they wonder why they feel like crap and they're tired and they're hurt and angry at everything. But what we want to do is we want to control our intensity in some fashion. You can use percentages, RIR, RPE. There's a lot of other things out there, but those are the three kind of main ones that I see. Now, what this means is if you're going to do a set of squats today, maybe you're going to do 5x5. That's a, you know, a traditional kind of thing. You might do 5x5 at 80%. So you're going to give yourself a intensity to aim for rather than saying, I'm going to do 5 sets of 5 of the most freaking weight I could possibly do for 5 reps. Ugh, that's not a good idea. That's way too much volume at that high of an intensity. You have to have some kind of cap on that intensity, some type of control on that intensity, and that will help you better manage your intensity in the sense that you're going to maintain better quality of effort and you're not going to get hurt. And those are very important components because it helps you make long-term progression. Now, we have podcast 1738, which is a training podcast titled Intensity Regulation, Percentages versus RPE versus RIR. So that would be a great one to listen to. Podcast 1738, Training, Intensity Regulation, Percentages versus RPE versus RIR. Now you can find all of our podcasts on our website, www.brutalirongym.com. There's a podcast player that goes back 300 episodes, so you'll find this one. If you want to find older podcasts underneath the podcast player, we have steps on how to find older podcasts. But podcast 1738 will be in the list of the podcast player, the main player on the webpage. So definitely want to listen to that one to learn more about intensity modulators. Now, if you're one of my clients, don't worry about it. You know, I take care of that for you. So the fourth tip we have is intensity versus volume. When you're testing your strength, you're kind of wanting to see where you're at in your strength. You want to use high intensity, but super low volume. So you might only work up to like a max effort set of 2 reps at 95%. If you can do 95% for 2 reps, you've definitely gotten stronger because that's not typical. Typically at 95%, you're going to do 1 rep and it might look really clean and maybe you could add 5 pounds, 10 more pounds, but you're not going to typically get 2 reps. So that would be a way to test yourself is say, okay, I'm going to do 95%. See if I can get a clean single. If I feel like it, maybe I'll go for the second one. And I know that if I got 2 reps at 95, then I'm definitely getting stronger. So one max effort set that's high intensity, but it's only 1 set, so that's low volume.
Whereas when you're in between testing phases and you want to be building your strength, you do the opposite. You do low intensity, high volume. So it might be like those five sets of five reps at 80%. And then maybe over the next 4 weeks, next 3 weeks, you're going to increase the percentage by 2.5, but decrease a rep. So week one would be 5x5 at 80%. Week two is 5x4 at 82.5. Week three is 5x3 at 85%. Week four is going to be 5x2 at 87.5%. So that's kind of the idea. I do 4 week rotations in programs. I don't like staying with programs longer than 4 weeks in 99% of cases. So I like that frequency. It's the first week, you kind of feel it out, figure it out. Second week, you're feeling more confident with what you're doing. The third and fourth week, you can kind of really push yourself. But then before you over push yourself and get into an injury, you would switch over to a brand new program. So this is the way I like to do strength training. I don't really do major deloads for clients on a regular basis. We do them when needed, but it's because we control our intensity per 4 week wave that it allows us to avoid like a full deload week like you typically see other people do. I feel like it's just a waste of time. Why fall a week behind every 5 weeks? Let's just keep working. That's the idea. Then the last tip we have is isolations over instead of overloads. You want to test your progress and test your strength in lifts that don't require as heavy of load. So for example, a zombie squat. If you don't know what that is, you can pause the podcast, look up on YouTube. A zombie squat is a better tester of strength, like lower body and bracing core stabilizational strength, than a Hatfield squat. A Hatfield squat, again, if you don't know what that is, you can pause the podcast and search for it. A zombie squat is like a front squat, but your arms are extended out in front of you, fully extended out in front of you. So you're not actually touching the bar with your hands. That is freaking wicked. A Hatfield squat is typically done with a safety squat bar, and people will hold on to something in front of them, and they use their arms to help pull themselves up, as well as their legs to push themselves up. That is a major overload, and it's extremely taxing on the body. I don't like to use overloads very often because, again, we're trying to control intensity and not run the risk of any injuries. There are many, 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 many safer ways to do CNS overloads than certain eccentric loaded overloads. So, for example, isometrics. Isometrics are way better at CNS overload. You could do walkouts, like squat walkout. You could do a yoke walk if you want for squats, like to get overload on squats. Bench press, you can do lockout holds. There's like reverse band mini lockouts. There are so many things you could do that don't involve an eccentric, because the eccentric is often when people in overloaded conditions get muscle tears or connective tissue injuries. So it's just really unnecessary to do major overloads. I really think they're stupid, basically, because they run so much of a risk and there's just so many other ways to get it done. So I'm not a big fan of overload lifts. I do them from time to time in certain clients in certain conditions, but I don't do it on a regular basis. I would definitely suggest, especially if you're a non-strength focused athlete or you're in a non-strength sport, to do isolative or underloaded variations of major lifts. So if you wanted to do like a deadlift, try to do a no-touch pause deadlift. So maybe you do conventional deadlift. After the first repetition, you come down and stop about 1 inch off the ground, pause, 1, 2, and then drive back up. Come back down, stop 1 inch off the ground, pause, 1, 2, drive back up. That will severely limit the weight that you can do. But it's still a great builder and tester for posterior strength. Posterior chain strength. You're not going to get as injured doing that as you would on some major overloaded variation of deadlift. So if you're doing like trap bar deadlifts, almost a complete waste of time, because it's just basically a quad extension, it's a fancy leg extension. You're not going to get a lot of hip loading, you're not going to get a lot of lower back loading, you're not going to get a lot of posterior chain out of trap bar deadlifts. Now, you will get some, I don't doubt that, and you're getting a lot of thoracic tension. So I know they're challenging and I know they have their own difficulties to them, but overloading and doing 1,000 pounds on a trap bar isn't really going to make your deadlift much stronger than an isometric hold or like those pause no touch deadlifts would. They would actually be significantly better, and there's way less injury doing those things. So you want to use underloaded variations or isolative variations rather than overload variations for testing strength. Okay, so those are our five tips. If you want to train for strength while participating in a non-strength focused sport, maximize your nutrition and sleep, train to technical failure, not total failure, use intensity modulators like percentages, RIR, RPE, make sure you understand the relationship of intensity and volume. When one goes up, the other has to go down, and use underloaded isolated variations rather than overload variations for strength progression. Awesome. If you have any questions, if you need anything, reach out. I'm always here and I'm always happy to help. My email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, please share the podcast. If you like the podcast, please consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on our website. Also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brutal Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.